Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Another edition of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom. I'm thrilled that you're with us. If you're listening in Palm Beach, of course, you're on 95.9. And if you're on the Treasure Coast, you're at 106.9. But wherever you are, we're glad that you're here. If you're a new listener, welcome. I'm glad that you found us. If you're a regular, you're in for a treat tonight. October, of course, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And breast cancer awareness begins with proper diagnosis. And we're going to be talking about breast imaging with radiologist Dr. John Rosenzweig from West Boca Diagnostic Center. He's going to help us understand all about diagnosis, about radiology. He's going to about mammograms and about everything you need to know in order to get the proper diagnosis, because proper treatment begins with proper diagnosis, and that begins with my guest. And I'm going to be talking to Dr. Rosenzweig in just a minute. But first, a couple of things. One, I want to announce again, there is a free movie on October 30th at the Movies of Del Rey. It's called When All That's Left Is Love. It's a story of a family going through the end stages of Alzheimer's disease, filmed by the son of the person there. It's a documentary that has now won 13 awards around the country from film festivals. It's a free event. It begins at 9 o'clock in the morning at the Movies of Del Rey, When All That's Left Is Love. The movie begins at 10:15, and then there'll be Q&A afterwards. I'm going to be part of that, because it's something that's very, very important to us. If you have any interest in that, whenallthatsleftislove.com. whenallthatsleftislove.com. And if you are suffering or have a family member struggling with Alzheimer's disease, there's important support groups that are open and available for you. Tomorrow at noon, I will be running one at Barrington Terrace in Boynton Beach. That's noon tomorrow. And on Wednesday at Artis in Boca, Tino Negri is going to be running his at 4 o'clock. So those are Alzheimer's support groups. And if Parkinson's is the chronic disease in your family and you'd like to learn more about that, tomorrow at 11 o'clock in Palm Beach at the Neuroscience Institute in West Palm, there is a support group by Melissa Morante on Parkinson's. It is for those struggling and those who family members who are also struggling with that. I have a busy week this week. I'm going to be talking a number of times. I'm going to be talking about at the club. That's a new assisted living in Boynton Beach on Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning. And then I'm going to the JCC in Boynton Beach. And we're going to be talking more about this movie, When All That's Left Is Love. The Institute for Learning in Retirement in Boca Raton on Thursday at 11:30. I'm going to be talking about my around-the-world cruise. It's a really interesting subject. And then I'm going to be doing a book signing at Abbey Del Rey. And then at the Phoenix in Del Rey, 3 o'clock on Friday, Elder Fraud, Abuse, and Exploitation. So I encourage you, if any of those have interest, reach out and come and see us. We'd love to see you. But it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and my guest is here, and that's who you tuned in to listen to. So let me tell you a little bit about Dr. John Rosenzweig. Dr. Rosenzweig is a graduate of Drexel University College of Medicine. He graduated originally for his Bachelor of Science at the University of Florida. He is board certified by the American Board of Radiology. He did his residency in diagnostic radiology at the University of Florida Health Center in Jacksonville, and he did a preliminary year in internal medicine at the University of Florida Health Science, also in Jacksonville. Did his fellowship training at the University of Florida in Jacksonville. He is a radiologist and breast imaging and specializing in breast imaging intervention in JD Boy, I'm having a hard time today. I apologize. And general radiology at West Boca Radiology Center. Am I saying that right? Diagnostic Center. And he's an assistant professor of clinical biomedical science at FAU Charles Schmidt College of Medicine. Dr. Rosenzweig, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Good. So Breast Cancer Awareness Month, everybody's talking about breast cancer. Everybody, it's top of mind. The Breast Cancer Walk is next week. The thing that you think of first is mammograms. And there's a lot of questions about mammograms. It's not just the way it used to be. So let's answer some of them if we can. Can you give us a 30,000-foot view of what people should know about mammograms and maybe how they've changed over the years?
Sure, absolutely. So what we would say is there was a long time when mammograms were analog, or what we call film screen. Kind of like if you're thinking about taking a picture, right? So they would take a picture, then it would have to be developed. And as you can imagine, you know, the analog picture, not that good, but it's all we had. Then we moved on to the digital age. So, you know, sometime in the last decade or two, there was the digital age and mammograms became digital. So it kind of progressed from that analog phase to the digital phase. And there were benefits to the digital mammogram. Things like if the picture wasn't perfect, we could use a computer to make it look better. So you didn't really have to worry about taking that extra picture because something wasn't exactly perfect on the picture.
Right.
So it helped with that. The digital images themselves improve the actual detection of breast cancer, which we can get into, but it improves just our ability to see breast cancers, and it improves our ability to see things that aren't breast cancer. And so, you know, digital lasted for, you know, about 10, 15 years on its own. And then we progressed into what we now have is the 3D age. And that's really where we are now. We're in the age of 3D mammography, or what you'll hear referred to as digital breast tomosynthesis. And it is a digital picture. It's taken the same digital way, but it's a different way of taking the picture. It's taken with the same machine. So the machine doesn't look any different. It's still the digital machine. But essentially, if you think about the mammogram of any kind of picture, of a two-dimensional picture, everything kind of overlaps on itself. So if you try to take a two-dimensional picture of a three-dimensional object, it becomes very difficult to see all the little parts.
That makes sense.
Right. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to try to divide it up, and that's where tomosynthesis comes in. So the idea behind tomosynthesis, which is actually tomography, has been around for a long time. If you get a CAT scan, that's just a same thing. That's a tomography, where it takes a bunch of smaller slices through the area of interest, and then we can look at it as radiologists on the computer, and we can see those much smaller slices through that area. So with the breast, it's the same thing, right? With the breast, it's a three-dimensional object. We're taking a picture. So now we get multiple smaller slices through the breast, and it allows us to actually see those things that would otherwise be superimposed on top of each other if it was just a 2D picture. And that's what makes tomosynthesis significantly better than 2D mammography.
So what I would take as a layperson from what you just said is that we now get better images, clearer images, but more importantly, earlier images. We can see things, if I'm hearing you properly, see things sooner than we might have seen them before?
Correct. So with tomosynthesis, the studies have shown us that with 3D mammography, we have improvements in both the metrics that we look for when we're looking for breast cancer detection. So the first thing that we found is it detects more invasive cancers, which is what we want to see anyway.
Right.
Right. So different studies, we've seen from a 20% increased detection rate to a 65% increased detection rate of tomosynthesis over standard 2D digital mammography, which is significant because you can imagine that's the whole point of going for your mammogram in the first place, is to detect the cancer. So if we have a better way to detect the cancer in the same machine, which really doesn't change anything from the patient's standpoint, then absolutely, we should be doing it. The other metric that we look at is that recall rate. You know, as anyone who's had a mammogram knows you get a letter after your mammogram, and you hope that letter says you're normal, come back in a year. But every once in a while, it'll say you need to come back for more imaging, and that's what we call a recall. So what we've found with the 3D mammogram is up to a 40% decrease in that recall rate, because what happens with the 2D, again, is we get some overlapping structures and we can't really figure out what they are, so we have to call you back to take some special pictures and do some other things. But with the 3D mammogram, now that it's all separated into smaller slices, we can see, oh, that's nothing. That's just your normal breast tissue, so we don't have to call you back.
So we've reduced the number of, for lack of a better term, false positives.
Correct.
Right.
That's absolutely right.
Is every anomaly cancer?
No. So, right? So just to give you maybe an idea of the numbers. So just in general, in an overall general screening population, we will recall or call back about 10% of the people who have a mammogram. So one out of every 10 patients will get called back. Well, of those 10 that get called back, one in 10 of those will have something suspicious that needs to be biopsied. And of those, about one or two in 10 of them will be cancer. So all the rest of those are not cancers. They're other benign diseases. And there are many benign diseases that go on in the breast. Most commonly, cysts in the breast are the most common. Solid masses such as fibroadenomas, especially in younger people, you'll see fibroadenomas. They are completely benign. But on a mammogram, on just a black and white picture, it just looks like a mass, and it's hard to tell if it's a cancer or not a cancer just from that one picture, which is why we then proceed to additional imaging. And sometimes we have to go as far as even further workup.
So to go back to some basics, there is significant controversy. I'm not sure that that's the right way to describe it. But, how often should you have a mammogram? Should you ever stop having a mammogram? When should you start having a mammogram? These are all questions that I think bedevil a great number of women and their husbands.
Absolutely.
Well.
Yeah, I get asked that all the time. So essentially what happened is the reason it's controversial is because the statistics on the sides of the data that we use shows us that there is a definite improvement in mortality or death rate from breast cancer ever since we started this whole screening process, which was in the early 90s, really, when we got down into it and it really became, sort of the mainstream to get mammograms. So we did find up to, almost these 30, 40, 50% reductions just by having mammograms. So
right.
Recently, within the past 5 years or so, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force came out, and they actually said to begin your screening mammogram at age 50. That's what they said. There was no data to support that. There's still no data to support that. And so some of the issues with that recommendation is that what we have found is that in the age group of 40 years old to 49 years old, mammography has shown a 30% reduction in death from breast cancer. So by starting at 50, you're completely ignoring that 30% reduction that happens in that 40 to 49-year-old age group. Also in that 40 to 49-year-old age group, if you look at life years saved by mammography overall, just the number of years of life that are saved overall, 40% of those life years saved from mammography come in that group. So that's a lot of people that we are just ignoring if we start at age 50. So the American College of Radiology, which sort of is what guides the radiologists, and then sort of a subgroup of them, the Society of Breast Imaging, has come out and said, if you are an average risk patient, which means that you have a lifetime risk of breast cancer, which is less than 15%, that's just the average woman, then you should begin an annual screening mammogram at age 40. And that's when you should begin, because that's really when the data shows that you really will start improving on your chances of detecting cancer and your chances of saving lives.
So I don't know what it is that you just said that prompted this question for me, but is there is cancer in that 40 to 50 age group, if it is discovered, typically more severe than if it were discovered at a later time? Or is that just crazy brain thinking?
Yeah, no, often if we see cancer in younger patients, it tends to be a more aggressive cancer,
right?
Because, it's not all that common. So there must be a reason that it started in those younger patients. But just to keep in mind, the data really shows that about 20 to 25% of breast cancers are in that age group, in that 40, 49-year age group. So it's not negligible. It's
wow.
Actually a significant number. And that's why really they recommend this starting at age 40. The reason that they don't, for an average risk patient, recommend starting before age 40, because sometimes I get that question, is because of dense breast tissue. And we'll talk about that a little bit.
Right.
But in younger women, especially premenopausal women, your breast tissue is actually denser before menopause. And dense breast tissue on a mammogram is white. So the breast, to back up a little bit, the breast is made up of fibrous tissue, glandular tissue, and fatty tissue. And the fibrous tissue and the glandular tissue are white, and the fatty tissue is black. And so that's all we have, right? We only have two colors on our pictures. Well, every kind of disease, including cancer, is also white. So the more breast tissue you have, the harder it is for us to see the cancer. So the idea is, if you get into a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old with mostly fibrous and glandular breast tissue, the problem is it's very difficult for us to see the cancer. And in those age groups, cancer is so low, the incidence of cancer is so low, that it's not worth doing it on a population scale. Now, there are certain people who should have a mammogram at that age. So, for example, if you're considered a high-risk patient. And so what that means really is that if you use one of the breast cancer calculators, of which there are multiple calculators and you can find them online, but if you use one and you put in your risk factors, which are mainly personal risk factors as well as family history risk factors, and you answer all the questions, it'll give you a number, and that'll be your lifetime risk of breast cancer. Now remember, the average patient, the average woman in the United States has a 1 in 8 chance of developing breast cancer. But if you have a greater than 20% chance of breast cancer, you're considered high risk. And if you're high risk, we recommend starting your mammogram earlier. And by that, what we mean is sometime between the age of 25 and 30, and or 10 years younger than the age of a first degree relative who was diagnosed. So if you have a mother or a sister who was diagnosed at age 37, then really you should probably start around 27. Or if they were 43, you should start at 33. So we recommend 10 years before that, around age 25 to 30. You know, a lot of times we'll just start at age 30, but sometimes a little bit sooner, depending if you really have a strong family history. Some other things that are considered high risk, you may have heard of the BRCA gene mutation.
BRCA gene, right.
So if you have the BRCA gene mutation, we recommend starting earlier. And then just some other kind of rare genetic syndromes that, you know, if you have it, you usually know. And those give you a higher risk of developing breast cancer. So for those, we recommend starting mammography earlier than age 40. And then we also recommend some other tests, too,
wow,
for some of those. But that's kind of where we are as far as starting mammograms.
And am I right in saying that annual, this should be done annually? Do you ever stop getting mammograms?
Yeah, so annual mammogram is been shown to be the best. Even skipping 1 year has been shown to decrease the chances of, obviously decrease chances of detection and increasing the mortality rate. So definitely annual mammography is the way to go. Stopping is also a question I get all the time. A lot of patients come in and they say, oh, I'm 65, my doctor told me I can stop. I'm 70, my doctor told me I can stop. Essentially, what it comes down to is, I know we talked about, you know, women in their 40s, you know, still get breast cancer in 20-25% of the time, but cancer is still more prevalent as you get older. That's just a fact. And so what happens is, just because you turn 65 or you turn 70 doesn't mean your body, you're no longer going to get breast cancer. You still have just as likely of a chance, if not a greater chance, of developing breast cancer after that. So really what the recommendation is from the American College of Radiology is, if your life expectancy is greater than 5 to 7 years, so if you plan on living for more than 5 to 7 years from now, then you should continue mammogram. And we have people that come in their 90s and get mammograms because they're very healthy women. And essentially they say they know they could still develop breast cancer and they want to do something about it if they have it. One of the other things that I like to say is, you know, if you're going to go all the way with treatment, if you're willing to go to biopsy, and then if it's positive, you're willing to go to all of the treatments that you need to have for breast cancer, if you're willing to do that, no matter what your age is, you should continue your screening. If you're not willing to do that, you know, if you say, I'll come for my mammogram, but I'm not going to do anything if it's abnormal, then you should stop, because you should only proceed with the imaging if you're going to go all the way and you're willing to take it all the way. But there's no specific age for that.
Well, that is a fascinating take. A really interesting look at this, and I can't wait to talk to you more about breast cancer diagnoses, radiology. If you're just tuning in, of course, I'm here with Dr. John Rosenzweig. Dr. Rosenzweig is a radiologist, West Boca Diagnostic Center. We're talking during Breast Cancer Awareness Month about proper diagnosis. We're talking about mammogram. We're talking about the different, well, we haven't really talked yet about the different kinds of mammogram, but we're going to. We've been talking about some of the statistics. We've barely begun to scratch the surface. There is so much to tell you. We're going to talk about biopsy, the difference between needle biopsies today and the way biopsies used to be done. We're going to talk about screening versus diagnostic, pain, breast self-examination. The list goes on and on. This is a most important subject for you, for your daughters, for your mothers. It really doesn't matter. Actually, I may ask Dr. Rosenzweig about men. We rarely ever talk about that, particularly at this time of the year during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Anyway, I can't be the only one with a question. So if you have a question for Dr. Rosenzweig or for me, you can call us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client. Because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620. Or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Eldercare 360 part of your team. Eldercare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. This is a fascinating show tonight. I'm so excited. My guest is terrific. We're talking about breast cancer diagnosis with radiologist Dr. John Rosenzweig. Dr. Rosenzweig is at West Boca Diagnostics Center. If you just tuned in late, you missed a whole host of stuff, but I'm going to tell you how you can catch up later. In the meantime, we are talking about mammograms, and we're talking about the radiology, the diagnosis, or the imaging. I guess we're going to move on to what happens after the initial diagnosis or the initial mammogram showing something positive. Why don't we move on to
sure.
that?
So we were talking about screening mammograms, and essentially screening, the idea of screening is you don't have any symptoms, right? You don't have a lump, you don't have any focal pain, you don't have anything that making you come in. You're just doing it because we are looking to see if you have cancer. So that's the screening mammogram. But there's an alternative to a screening mammogram, which we call a diagnostic mammogram. Now, from a picture standpoint or from an equipment standpoint, it's no different. We use the mammo machine. It's exactly the same thing. The real difference is you have a diagnostic mammogram if you have a problem or if you have a reason to need to have a specific mammogram more than just looking for cancer that's asymptomatic. And so essentially what happens if you have a diagnostic mammogram is you'll come in and the technologist who takes the pictures can actually take some specialized pictures, some more coned down pictures or more magnified pictures, or can focus on an area if you have a specific area of concern. And what they'll also do is they'll also come and show the radiologist that the picture at that time. So For the most part, screening mammograms are going to be done, and then your radiologist will read it at some point that day, and then the report will go out, and you'll get the letter, and your doctor will get the report. But in a diagnostic mammogram, really, it should be looked at, interpreted, and a decision should be made while you're still in the facility. And so therefore, you get an answer at that time. Now, you shouldn't go and get a diagnostic mammogram just for the sake of getting a diagnostic mammogram. That's what screening mammograms are for. But like I said, if you have a problem, so specifically, if you feel a lump, that's usually one of the most common reasons for getting a diagnostic mammogram. So it's not your time to get a screening mammogram, but you feel something that you didn't feel before, or your doctor feels something they didn't feel before. So you come in, you get that diagnostic mammogram. Then usually at the same time as that, most of the time, you'll also get a breast ultrasound. So breast ultrasound is very good for characterizing masses. So a lot of people are scared by the word mass when it comes to a mammogram. But really, if you think about it, a mass is just something that is three-dimensional and takes up space. So there are many benign masses. Cysts, fibroadenomas, and other things are benign masses. And then there are obviously malignant masses, cancers. And so essentially, an ultrasound is a good way to characterize a mass once we see it on the mammogram or if you feel it. So that's when we would move on to an ultrasound at that point. So for the most part, when people come in for a diagnostic mammogram, they'll also get essentially a diagnostic ultrasound, for lack of a better term. But they'll get an ultrasound too, and then the radiologist will put the two sets of images together and will come up with an idea of what's going on. And they'll tell you, you know, it's fine, everything's benign, and you come back in a year and don't worry about it. They might tell you there's something there. We think it's benign, or the term that we actually use by the American College of Radiology is probably benign. That's the phrase. And usually what that means is it's something that has a very low likelihood of being cancer, less than 2% chance of being cancer. So it's not worth doing anything about it right now because it's very highly likely to be benign. But I can't say with 100% certainty that it's benign. So therefore, what I want you to do is come back. And almost always, it's come back in 6 months. And right. We'll repeat the imaging, and we'll do it again, and we'll see if it changed. And if it changed at that time, then we'll upgrade it to being something suspicious. And if it didn't change, then maybe we'll follow it again. You know, usually what we should do is you should follow things for 2 years, because the rule of thumb is that if something doesn't change in 2 years, it's not cancer. So we usually follow things that are probably benign over the short term for 2 years, and then we'll put you back on a yearly, just routine imaging basis.
And what are those that are not cancer, that are masses? I know fibroid cysts. I've heard that term a lot. Are there other things that get people nervous, that make you want them to come back? What are those things, and are those 10 times more prevalent than cancer, right?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
is it commonplace? Because, you know, I mean, I know so many women that have been scared to death by, come back, we need to do this again,
right.
Or we think we saw something, we want to check it out,
right.
You know, and for whatever period of time it is until they get that report, they're terrified, now they have this mass, and we think it's benign, but they're scared
right.
to death.
Right. Right, so yeah, so let's remember that, you know, about 10 to 20% of these things are going to wind up being cancer, and all the rest of them are going to be benign. In the end, they're going to wind up being benign. A cyst. A cyst is the most common by far. A cyst is just a collection of fluid. It's simple physiologic fluid that's inside this cyst. But it looks like a mass on a mammogram. It feels like a mass to you. It feels like a mass to your doctor, or you might not feel it at all, but on the imaging. But then we go to ultrasound, and we see it's a simple fluid collection. Those are benign, and we won't even call you back. Very commonly, what we'll see is we'll see cysts with some junk in them, right? Some protein in it, some blood in it. But we can't tell from the imaging standpoint that that's what's in it. All we can tell is that there's something in it. But again, almost all of the time, what looks like a cyst with something in it is just a cyst with something in it. Very, very rarely, it's actually a cancer. And that's why a cyst with something in it, or something we call a complicated cyst, is something that we will follow. So, and that's very common. I would say I see complicated cysts on more ultrasounds that I do than not seeing one. That's how common they are. And you'll get that short-term callback, come back in 6 months again, so we can make sure this complicated cyst doesn't change and really is a complicated cyst.
So what we should basically say is that you are more likely the bearer of good news than bad news.
Right. Well, it just takes 2 years for us to get to that point.
Right.
But yes,
right.
Exactly.
I get that. If you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. If you're a new listener, we're here every Monday night at 6 o'clock from 6 to 7. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. If you're a regular listener, we're glad and thrilled that you are here again. Tonight we are talking, because it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we are talking about how to be aware of the process of diagnosing what may or more likely is not breast cancer. And I'm here with Dr. John Rosenzweig, who is a radiologist at West Boca Diagnostic Center. And we're explaining everything you need to know about the diagnosis of breast cancer, or the diagnosis of it isn't breast cancer, which is just as important as if it is. If you have questions for my guest or for me, you can call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were station might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, and So Is My Mom, with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. And if your mom's getting older, she should still be getting her annual mammograms, as we have learned tonight from my guest, Dr. John Rosenzweig, who is, Dr. Rosenzweig is with West Boca Diagnostic Center. He's a radiologist specializing in the diagnosis of breast cancer, breast imaging. We've talked a little bit about mammograms, the difference between the original mammogram and now digital and now to 3D. We've talked a little bit about ultrasound, but now we're going to talk about biopsy, because if we've progressed down the highway and we have something suspicious, we're going to need a biopsy to figure out whether it is or is not cancer, right?
And right, that's exactly.
And that is what also that you do. So let's talk a little bit about, because that's changed.
Yeah. So after you have that mammogram, let's say it's abnormal, or let's say you came in with you were feeling a lump, you went on to your ultrasound, perhaps if it was a lump, and we found something, and we get to the point where there is something suspicious on your imaging. So we can't we can't diagnose cancer from the imaging because it doesn't tell us that, but we can say this is suspicious and it needs to now be sampled. So then we use our pathologist colleagues to actually tell us what it is. But so there are essentially two ways to get what we call a tissue diagnosis, where you take a little bit of that breast tissue and we send it off to the lab and they tell us what it is. So for a very long time, that was going to the operating room. So you had to see a surgeon, you went to the operating room, general anesthesia, they made a big incision, they cut out whatever part it was, and then most of the time it turned out to be benign, and now you just have a big scar for the rest of your life, but it was benign. And then sometimes it was cancer, and then you would then proceed to another surgery after that where it was right. The definitive surgery. So now what we do is we do these image-guided biopsies. They're minimally invasive. And all happens is that we use a small needle, and we use the imaging modality that we best diagnosed the problem in the first place. So if we could only see it on a mammogram, then we do the biopsy under the guidance of the mammogram machine, or what we call a stereotactic biopsy. If we see it under ultrasound, we do it under the ultrasound, what we call an ultrasound-guided biopsy. Sometimes if we only see it under MRI, then we'll do an MRI-guided biopsy. But the idea of the biopsies is all the same. So all that we do is it's an outpatient procedure. You go to a breast center of your choice, probably the one that you had your imaging at, and then essentially the procedure takes 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. We clean off your skin with a cleaning solution. We numb you up. It's a tiny needle like we use when you get a flu shot. The numbing medication, you might feel a little pinch. You might feel a tiny bit of burning. And after that, you're numb, and you should not feel a thing after that. So it's a minimal to no pain procedure. We make a very tiny incision, less than an inch in size. We put a small needle in. We use either a little bit of vacuum suction. It takes out just a little bit of the tissue, not enough that you'll ever miss it. And we send it off to the lab. They tell us what it is. And that's pretty much the end of it. We don't even need stitches. You just put a little bandage over the cut that we made, and that's the end of it. And then you get your results in 48 to 72 hours. And that's really the way that it's done now, that the biopsies are done now. What they found is that there's no disadvantage to that biopsy technique. In the beginning, people were worried that you wouldn't get enough of a sample,
right?
And then you could get a false negative. But the samples now are definitely sufficient enough for the pathologist to give the appropriate result. So that's kind of the other thing that some people worry about. I actually get this question. Is what we call seeding the tract, or if you're sticking a needle in and it is cancer, and then you pull the needle out, well, did you just run those cancer cells all along right. The area that you just went through? But we've seen from the statistics, and we know that doesn't happen. There are things built into the needle itself that prevent that from happening. So that's not something you really have to worry about. And so really this minimally invasive image-guided biopsy is the way to go for pretty much any time that you need to have a breast biopsy.
And I think by the time you get to the point at where you need a biopsy or needle biopsy, and I'm going to assume that all biopsies today are done that way, right? Needle biopsies,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
No longer do they have to do an open incision. But what percentage of those still come back negative, right?
Right. So most of them. So there's the numbers. We can divide it up into pretty much the mammography guided biopsies, the stereotactic biopsies, and the ultrasound guided biopsies. So usually on the mammography guided biopsy side, it's positive somewhere between 10 to 20% of the time, and it's negative the rest of the time. Because once we get to that point on a mammogram, it's often very difficult to determine if something is cancer or if it's one of the many other benign diseases that, that the pathologists differentiate, that you might see the words adenosis, or you might see, they often just call it fibrocystic disease. But those things can produce what looks suspicious on a mammogram.
This, is there any increase or decrease, any change or difference in the numbers from regular screening discovery versus self-breast examination discovery, self-discovered, if somebody finds a lump and comes in versus what you may find in your regular annual screening? Are the statistics pretty much the same?
Well, so essentially if you find a lump or you feel something, chances are that you're already put yourself in a higher risk of it being cancer just because you felt something that wasn't there before, whereas in the screening population that just includes everybody and you're asymptomatic.
Right.
So the statistics we're supposed to have is we're supposed to detect 3, 4, 5 cancers in every 1,000 screening patients that we do. But that obviously that doesn't match the 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer
right.
in their lifetime. And that's because a lot of those it wasn't detected at screening. It was detected by what we call palpation, or you felt it. But when you put all those numbers together, that's when you get the 1 in 8 chance of, you know, 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer.
So suffice to say that while the diagnosis is scary as can be, the reality is that in most cases, you're not going to get that diagnosis. In most cases, if you do your regular screening and you follow the procedure and you go through all of that, the likelihood of it being something more serious is negligible.
Correct.
In relative terms.
And then even when it is something, we've gotten to that point with that, 99% 5-year survival rate at a stage zero, or what we call carcinoma in situ, where it hasn't really broken through or become invasive. That stage one invasive has about a 92% survival rate. So we have very good treatments. We're detecting things very early. Breast cancer isn't a death sentence. It's
right.
Just you want to detect it so that you can treat it, so that you don't die of breast cancer. But it's certainly very, at this point, most breast cancers are treatable as long as they're detected early.
Which is the reason that you should be going to my guest, Dr. John Rosenzweig, who is a radiologist at West Boca Diagnostic Center, who is giving us the information that you all need, that we all need, to guarantee your well-being. As with all cancers, early diagnosis is critical to survival. And as Dr. Rosenzweig just said, the earlier the better, and that is, of course, what he does. If you have questions for my guest or for me, you can call us, 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, at Comfort Care, you're an agency, not a nurse registry, right?
Yes, Mike. When looking at home care in South Florida, there are two types of companies, and on the front, we look very much the same. We're an agency, which means all of our caregivers are our employees. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. We pay the professional liability insurance, we pay the workers' comp insurance, the overtime, and we pay the employment taxes. In other words, we are the true employer. When working with a nurse registry, the client is the employer, and that matters. Another big difference is the ability to train. Agencies are allowed to train, and we do. We conduct both field training and in-home training. A nurse registry's caregivers are deemed experts in their field and therefore are not allowed to be trained by the registry over and above what the state requires. We also have a very rigorous hiring process. The caregiver pool in South Florida is huge, and we strive to hire the top 20%. We do that in a few ways, including testing, interviews, background checks over and above what the state requires, and passing the family test. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact health care challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can
give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome, everybody. We're glad that you're with us. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We are, of course, here every Monday from 6 to 7. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. Tonight, because it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I am fortunate to have as my guest Dr. John Rosenzweig, who is a radiologist at West Boca Diagnostic Center. We've been talking all night about the diagnosis of breast cancer. And honestly, the key to a successful outcome, if you are unfortunate enough to be diagnosed with breast cancer, is early detection. And that's very much what my guest is talking about all night, which is about mammograms, when to get them, how often to get them, what to do when you get them, the difference in mammograms, and then what moves on. We've talked about ultrasound, and we've talked about biopsies. Some of the things that confuse people, though, are dense breasts or breast density. And Dr. Rosenzweig, that presents kind of a unique problem for you, right?
Absolutely.
And so let's talk about that and what happens to people who do have dense breasts.
Right, absolutely. So it's been in the news actually recently as breast density. So just to revisit a little bit, but what is breast density? So the breast consists of fibrous tissue, glandular tissue, and fatty tissue. The more fibrous and glandular tissue you have, the more dense that we call it. And that's really related to on a mammogram. It's how dense your breast tissue looks on a mammogram. So if you can imagine, the dense tissue looks white on the mammogram and the non-dense or the fatty tissue looks black on the mammogram. So the more of that fibroglandular tissue, that dense tissue you have, the harder it is for us to see other things like cancer on a mammogram. And so essentially what happens is the American College of Radiology has come out with four categories for us to give you on your mammogram. And every mammogram, every radiologist that interprets every mammogram will give you a category, one of those four categories. And essentially they're divided from the low density category all the way up to the higher density category. It can be A, B, C, or D, or there are phrases that are used in the report. But essentially, if you consider that the higher density breasts are harder to see breast cancer, that makes it harder for us to detect. At the same time, the higher density breasts have a higher amount of that fibrous and glandular tissue, and that's where cancers come from in the first place. That's how they arise. They arise from that tissue. So the more of that tissue you have, the higher likelihood you have of getting breast cancer in the first place.
Uh-huh.
So you have a higher chance. It's not a big higher chance, but it is a higher chance. And on top of that, it's harder for us to see it. So it kind of puts you in that category where you're just harder to detect and more likely to have it. So in 2018, last year, the state of Florida enacted a law. And that law was essentially saying that all radiology facilities have to inform every patient who has a mammogram of your breast density if it's in one of those top two categories. So if you're in one of the more dense two categories, then that letter that you get is going to tell you that you have what are considered dense breasts. And it doesn't make any recommendations as to what you should do with that, because that's up to you and your doctor, and you can discuss it with the radiologist. But essentially, it tells you that you do have that, and therefore, what it says is you might benefit from what we call supplemental screening, which is additional screening on top of the mammogram that you already had. Supplemental screening could be a screening ultrasound to do additional imaging to see if there's more. So ultrasound is not good by itself. Don't get an ultrasound in lieu of a mammogram. But in addition to a mammogram, if you have dense breast tissue, and if you're somewhat of a higher risk, if you are in a higher risk category, then that's something you can discuss with your doctor. So that's one way of supplemental screening, and that's really where the breast density issue is coming into play.
Does that then bring in the MRI component? For a diagnostic perspective?
Sure. So, yeah. So, breast MRI is kind of our third way of looking for breast cancer. So, we talked about mammograms. We talked about ultrasounds. And so, breast density is one thing that actually leads to your increased risk. And if you use one of those calculators that we talked about earlier to determine your risk, some of the calculators actually take your breast density into consideration when they're determining your risk. And if you have one of those higher dense categories, your risk goes up. And if your risk gets into that 20% category where you're greater than 20% lifetime risk of breast cancer, one of the things that we recommend is on top of getting that yearly mammogram, you get a yearly MRI. MRI detects more. It's more sensitive to the detection of breast cancer, but it's not very specific. So we see lots of things and we don't know what really they are we're seeing. So that's why we don't MRI everybody. We're selective as to who we MR, only the people who are in that high risk category, of which breast density can put you into that category. But that's where MRI comes into play.
So a lot of people are concerned, not just about breast diagnostic procedures, but x-ray and radiation in general. All of the things that we're talking about tonight, does that increase risk, or are we using such minute amounts of radiation that it really is irrelevant?
So that's a great question. We get that a lot. So mammograms use x-rays, and x-rays are radiation, which we'll talk about. Ultrasound is not radiation. MRI is not radiation. So, so ultrasound, really, there's no real physiologic effects of ultrasound. MRI, the only real physiologic effects are we have to inject you with a contrast material, which is gadolinium. And there are some controversies in the news about if there are downsides to gadolinium. That's very controversial and up in the air right now. I wouldn't really be worried about it at this time. Mammograms do have radiation. What I'll tell you, because what I usually tell all my patients, if you have flown from New York to Florida, or from Florida to New York, you've gotten 2 to 3 times the radiation that you get from the mammogram that you got. So if you're going to do that flight and not worry about the radiation, don't worry about the radiation of your mammogram either. It's just not enough. It's so negligible. It's not enough to actually matter.
It's really fascinating. If you're just tuning in, I've been here tonight with Dr. John Rosenzweig. Dr. Rosenzweig is a radiologist specializing in breast cancer detection at West Boca Diagnostic Center. We've been talking about so much that is so interesting. And if you're sorry that you missed this show, I have good news for you. You can listen, because we podcast. Yes, we do. Tomorrow, this show will be up and running on OMG I'm Getting. We'll be up around noontime, and you can listen to this show or any of the other 300 or so shows that we've done over the years. But this show, really, really important during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. If podcasting is not your thing, and I understand that, you can go to palmbeach.comfortcare.com, palmbeach.comfortcare.com. Comfort Care, ComfortCare. You're going to want to put a T in there. Your spell check's going to want to do that. Don't do it, because you won't find us. So palmbeach.comfortcare.com. If you don't have a radio but you love the show, you don't have to be in your car to listen, because you have a smartphone and you can download the TuneIn Radio app. TuneIn Radio. You just set it to WSVU. Those are our call letters, WSVU. Tune in radio. Set a reminder for every Monday night at 6 o'clock, and you can listen to us wherever you are. And, of course, we simulcast at TrueOldies.com, locally, across the nation, across the world, actually, TrueOldies.com. I found out today, thanks to my guest, you don't need www to find us. Just TrueOldiesFLA.com. Next week, Dr. James Galvin will be here. Dr. Galvin is from FAU. He's a well-known neurologist specializing in the treatment and diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. He actually believes that you can prevent Alzheimer's disease. He's very strong. He certainly believes that at the least you can delay the onset of Alzheimer's. He's a wonderful guy. He's a fabulous speaker. I encourage you to listen. It's going to be a terrific show next week. In 2 weeks, something that I find just fascinating. We're going to be talking about Honor Flight. Honor Flight originally began to take World War II veterans up to Washington, D.C. with somebody by their side. to take them to the recently then opened World War II Memorial. Today, because there are fewer of World War II veterans around, they are doing Korean War veterans and Vietnam War veterans as well. We're going to be talking about Honor Flight. We're going to be talking about their next flight from this area. It's going to be terrific. I want to remind everybody that October 30th is a really, really big day for two reasons. One, it's my 70th birthday, so I want everybody to wish me a happy birthday. But more importantly, there is a free movie called When All That's Left Is Love. It's a powerful documentary on the end stages of Alzheimer's disease. It's not a happy movie, but it's an instructive movie. It's a very important movie, and it will tell you what not to do and what you can do if you are have a family member struggling with Alzheimer's disease or other related dementias. I encourage you to make some time. When All That's Left Is Love, Wednesday, October 30 at the Movies of Delray, 7421 West Atlantic Avenue. If you want to register, you can go to whenallthatsleftislove.com. The movie, the program starts at 9 o'clock, the movie at 10:15. There'll be a Q&A. There'll be a couple of physicians there for you to talk to. You won't be disappointed. I encourage you to come if you can. And again, if you want to listen to this show with my guest, Dr. John Rosenzweig, we will be podcasting it first thing tomorrow. OMG, I'm getting. Dr. Rosenzweig, you know, we don't have a lot of time left. There's a whole host of questions that I have. Are there symptoms other than self-breast examination that should cause people to come to see you? Is there anything that somebody should be aware of? Because they can, they don't necessarily, well, I guess we should ask that. How do people get to you, right? Is it always by doctor's order or can they come themselves?
Yeah, so if you have any problems, you need to have an order or a script from your doctor for that diagnostic mammogram or that ultrasound. Just for screening in general, screenings can be what we call self-referred. So you can just show up and get your screening mammogram. If you've never been there before, but you've had a mammogram elsewhere, you should make sure you bring your prior mammograms because it's incredibly important to have something for the radiologist to compare to. The hardest mammogram to read is the one that has no priors.
Right.
As far as symptoms or things you can find, a lot of people come in and ask about breast pain. A lot of people worry about breast pain. Breast pain is incredibly common. It's most often benign. It's usually nothing to worry about as far as is it cancer. Only specific types of breast pain should even warrant a workup. And that's if it's on one side, what we call unilateral. If it's focal, so it's just in one place, you can actually point to it. You can say, my pain is right here, and you can put your finger on it. And if it happens all the time, if it's persistent. So a lot of times pains come and go with what we call cyclic. So they come and they go. That's not usually suspicious. So what's suspicious is that unilateral, focal, non-cyclic pain. That's what you should have worked up with a diagnostic mammogram and an ultrasound. Other just things besides a lump that you can feel or that your doctor feels, if you start having what we call either your skin is retracting or it's pulling in, or if you have new nipple retraction, not if you've had it your whole life, but if it's new, those are things that you can come in. And also nipple discharge. Suspicious nipple discharge would, again, be something that's unilateral on one side. It happens on its own, so it's spontaneous, not that you actually did it yourself, and that it's either clear or bloody. If it's white, it's not suspicious. If it's green, it's not suspicious. But if it's clear or if it's bloody, that makes it suspicious. And those are the things that you should have worked up.
And should you go to your primary, OBGYN, first?
Pretty much any doctor. Usually what we like to say is go to the one who knows your breast the best. Often you can have, you know, clinical breast exam once a year is what we recommend. And so if your OBGYN is the one who does that, then that's the place to go. If you're a family practitioner, then that's the place to go. That's where you would start when you have a problem, and you would wind up at the radiologist's office for your imaging after that.
If you're looking just for screening and you want to do this without a doctor, where are you?
So our facility is in West Boca. It's pretty much at the corner of Palmetto Park and Powerline. And we're in the shopping center there in that Garden Plaza Shops, and you'll see a big sign that says the Breast Center at West Boca Diagnostic Imaging. And we offer all the services there. You'll have a fellowship trained radiologist. We'll go from beginning to end. We can go from screening mammogram, diagnostic mammogram, ultrasound, MRI, all forms of biopsy. And we also have a patient navigator who'll kind of almost hold your hand through the process and coordinate everything so you don't have to worry about it on your own.
And I think most important is don't delay, don't put it off. If you suspect something, do something.
Yep.
Early diagnosis is key. It's critical. You're a wonderful guest. I hope I can talk you into coming back someday.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You have given a world of important information to the audience tonight, and the work you do is critical. I really can't thank you enough. If you missed the show, I'm sorry that you did. Dr. John Rosenzweig is from West Boca Diagnostic. We are talking about, during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the diagnosis, the radiological imaging of breast tissue to either rule out cancer or early detect cancer. I can't tell you how critical that is. This, of course, is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom, here every week, 95.9 in the Palm Beaches, 106.9 on the Treasure Coast. We're here every Monday talking about issues that confront boomers and their parents. We're on from 6 to 7. We are thrilled that you are with us tonight. If you're tuning in to the sports show, it will be here in just about 15 seconds. So I hope you enjoy that as well. I want to thank my guest again. I want to wish you all a great week. Remember October 30th, when all that's left is love, at the movies of Del Rey. Have a great week, everybody. Dr. John James Galvin next week. Good night, all. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom.